This episode of the show is brought to you by Audible. You can get a free 30-day trial and free audiobook of your choosing by going to audibletrial.com/missspots. Choose from over 180,000 different titles, such as Chris Jericho's latest book, No is a Four-Letter Word. It's even narrated by the man himself. Audiobooks are perfect for the person on the move. Believe me, they're great. Maybe you want a mystery novel or a biography of someone you love. Audible has it all. Plus, it's free to try. If you don't like it, which would be weird, cancel and keep your free audiobook that you downloaded forever. Go try it now at audibletrial.com/missspots. Audible. Listening is the new reading.
Breaking news, Mike. The Viking Raiders have now been renamed the Viking Raider Patriot Titan Bears.
This and other WWE repackagings on this episode of the Miss Spots podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's
time to play the game. Time to play the game.
You know, during the whole intro, I was thinking, if all else fails, they can just rename them and repackage them as the Cowboys because, you know, cowboy gimmicks have always worked in the history of the WWE.
It's a great fallback. We've seen it over and over again. I mean, Bret Hart was supposed to be a cowboy when he was introduced to the WWF back in like 1985, and we know that would have went over really well.
Oh, yeah, they would have been Hulk Hogan-level status if they would have gone through with that.
Always over with cowboys, my friend.
All right, so fun fact that I learned from watching television this week is that the Superstar Shakeup continues into this week.
So the Superstar Shakeup will never stop.
It can't stop, won't stop.
Can't, So did you read about why they made some of these moves?
No.
So apparently Fox wanted Andrade on SmackDown because they wanted a Latino star. They also wanted to have Zelina Vega and Aleister Black on the same show because they were also putting now Charlotte Flair with Andrade on the same show, and there was some backlash backstage to put all those little pieces together. Cesaro showing up on Raw was to apparently balance the roster out because they were making these moves.
Did Fox also want Jinder?
I think Fox really wanted Jinder Mahal and the Singh brothers to be destroyed by Lars Sullivan. Because everyone does. I think it just speaks to the sporadic nature of the WWE's booking. When they don't have any vision for any of this and anything can change at any time, and we're going to see this in SmackDown with the main event, it just, everything is so fly by the seat of your pants. And there's some good aspects to that sometimes, but often it just really, really reeks of poor planning. I think that's what is that what Edge and Christian used to say? It reeks of poor planning.
Exactly. It was their catchphrase.
I thought it was. To borrow a catchphrase, I should have said.
And, you know, if WWE were a company that did planning, you know, they would probably say something to Fox, like, along the lines of, like, all right, We have some storylines written for these people already on this other show. We can't really get into breaking that up right now because we want to see this through. Obviously, they don't, so that just made it so much easier for them to go, oh, you want them on SmackDown? Sure, no problem.
And I guess you do at some points have to bow to the network, and I kind of dig that, but like you just said, how did they not have Finn Balor's first opponent? And if they were to be booking things in a certain way, you say, well, we've got a plan. We've got 6 months worth of storylines booked out. But of course they don't, because they never do. And one of the things, Mike, that the WWE likes to book, and one of the things that I hope and I pray...
Multi-person matches?
Well, I never want to see one of those again. The quote-unquote hashtag pointless six-man match, pointless eight-man match, also throw it in there for the mix. But the typical everyone interrupts everyone promo to open up an episode of Raw or SmackDown.
Also, everybody gets a microphone.
Everyone gets a microphone. No one has anything interesting to say, yet they all walk down to the ring and bullshit, bullshit, bullshit. This is so tired, so boring, so repetitive. And the idea that we're going to find out who's going to fight Seth Rollins at Money in the Bank, that's a good idea. Mm-hmm. A match or matches to make that happen, great idea. We've got some time before the pay-per-view. Why don't you do this over 2 weeks? Why don't you do a tournament? This all could have been started last week. But no, they give us two triple threat matches. And by the way, Mike, triple threat rules say that it's no DQ. I hear Michael Cole telling me that in my sleep, and I have nightmares. I hate that stipulation because it's basically a get-out-of-jail-free card for the writers because they can do whatever they want. This is how they should book these. And if AEW, if you're listening, I'm not sure what the plans are for this, but I'm going to give you a tip. If someone cheats, interferes, does something nefarious in a triple threat match, they should be eliminated from the match, and it becomes a one-on-one match. If you can just hit someone in the head with a chair in a triple threat match, why would you not only do that?
Exactly, yeah.
I would, if I was Drew McIntyre, I'd go outside the ring, I'd get a steel chair, I'd beat the piss out of both my opponents, and I'd pin them. If that's the way that we're going to work this, then just do it that way.
It should just be a Donnybrook at all times.
Yeah, it's such lazy writing. That's why triple threat matches so often do not work, because they're not real wrestling matches. And to have the winners face each other later on Raw is just a waste. It's a waste of anticipation. It's a waste of storytelling, because we're getting it all in one episode. And I think Raw not only went to that well for the 10,000th time with the boring, repetitive promo after promo after promo, but they also did this thing on one episode of Raw, which is a huge mistake and just boring. That's the worst thing I can say about it.
That's the best thing I can probably say about it, because there weren't many good things about it.
And also, I am of the opinion now, Mike, I'm going hot takes all episode.
Oh, I like this.
Abandon the secondary titles. Retire them. Retire the U.S. Championship. Retire the IC belt. They are meaningless. The champions don't care about them. They're not interested in defending them. They just want the higher title. I'm kind of okay with someone wanting to step up. But if you don't care about the title around on your shoulder, then why should I? And the fact that they constantly are pinned. The only way someone ever earns a title match is by pinning the champion, which is nonsense. Samoa Joe takes the loss in this triple threat match for no freaking reason. For no reason. Samoa Joe doesn't matter. Finn Balor doesn't matter. They do not book them like they matter. They do not win matches on a regular basis. They lose constantly. Why are they even there? If you're not going to have titles that mean anything, just get rid of them. Retire them until someone can figure out 10 years from now how to actually book a wrestling show. Maybe they can, you know, pay for the WWE Network and watch some old shows, because it's right there, and figure it all out. I'm happy AJ Styles wins this. I would have booked him to win this. He's the right person. But pinning Samoa Joe over Rey Mysterio is just ludicrous. There's no reason for it. Have him pin Rey Mysterio. Do not pin your U.S. champion.
Preaching to the choir here, my friend.
Because round two, the Glow beats the champ. We get a one-on-one match with Billie Kay and Naomi. And Naomi pins the champion in a one-on-one match.
That was a one-on-one match? For some reason, it made it seem like it was a handicap match.
It was not a handicap match. First of all, Billie Kay and Peyton Royce are a tag team. They should never wrestle singles matches because they are a tag team. And they are the tag team champions. But fine, you have them wrestle. They have a two-on-one advantage, and they are the champions, and Naomi beating them does nothing for anyone. And making Naomi seem like a big deal and talking about her and actually giving her a full entrance again, which we haven't seen in months and months on SmackDown, is a reboot of sorts that does nothing for anyone. Because we know that they cannot focus on more than one women's storyline at one time. And Naomi will soon be in a background character again. She should not be beating the champions. Don't do it. Just don't do it. Make it a rule. Write it on a whiteboard that you can bring from arena to arena. Do not beat your champions, period, on episodes of Raw and SmackDown.
I'd love to just see, like, them in the writer's room, and they get started and someone throws out, "So we should have the Iconics lose," and then the door opens in and comes some guy named Steve. He's got the whiteboard, like, sorry I was late. Here's the whiteboard, the reminder. You guys didn't book the Iconics to lose, did you? Oh, we were just about to. Thanks, Steve. You reminded us that champions shouldn't lose like this.
Let me underline it for the 32nd time. Don't do it.
There's a whole lot of lines under that now.
Yeah, it makes your champions look ridiculous. The Miz was a big signing, if you want to call it that. I won't, because the superstar shakeup is nonsense. A big signing for Raw. Baron Corbin pins him on the second night in the company, I guess, or on the show, whatever you want to say. Mm-hmm. I do not mind Baron Corbin in this situation. I actually thought Baron Corbin would be a good first opponent for Seth Rollins. I know it's not a popular opinion. Baron Corbin is not over. He is despised for all the wrong reasons by a lot of the community. But I think they could have put together a decent little program. Seth could have gone over him handily. Corbin is bulletproof because everyone hates him all the time. And it kind of gets us through some of the doldrums of the early summer without a big feud. Not a bad idea. Putting Miz in this match, having him highlight the fact that he's a babyface now and he has an opportunity. If Corbin wasn't going to win this, I would have had Miz go over here and have Miz and AJ have a really kick-ass match where AJ actually goes over. It would have been a good primer for a good babyface versus babyface feud, and it would have let Miz be a little bit more of a seem a little bit more high upper echelon and as that guy that can work to get something done. Just my thoughts.
And also, I feel like you could have had them at the end of the show, instead of Seth coming out and going face-to-face in respect with AJ, you could have had Miz and AJ have that kind of moment where the mutual respect between them after a hard match and then, like, you can play up the Seth-AJ respect later on. You have almost a month to do that. But, yeah, you're right in that instance.
I think it's just a good rub for Miz. And you could do the same thing where Drew McIntyre gets put out and he's not involved in the finish and you protect him a little bit because Drew McIntyre is freaking money. And if he's not going to be the next challenger, then you need to hold on to him for a later date. Michael, Sami Zayn is very good at his job.
He is.
He is very good. He is so smarmy, so entitled. Yes, does he come off as a kind of pseudo carbon copy of Daniel Bryan at this point? A little bit. Yeah. But anyone that wants to show me their Instagram photos is automatically a heel in my book. And I think if he would just next week come out and show me some of his Yelp reviews, explain that because he's a Yelp elite, he has a little more sway and his opinions matter more, I think he's the biggest heel in the history of mankind.
Do they make Yelp for audiences? Because I could see Sammy definitely being elite at that. Like, Des Moines, Iowa, fucking losers.
Dude, we're booking Sami Zayn better than the WWE is thinking of right now. That would be a solid thing. But Sammy looks really good right now.
Did you just get an email from the anonymous Raw GM?
I did, and it actually said, no, we're not booking Sami Zayn that way at all. And by the way, we're going to forget this entire thing next week, and he's going to disappear from TV for 6 months. I like what they're doing with Sammy here. I do really think he's a great baby face, but Sammy right now seems to be in a situation. He did a great job as a heel before he was injured. We need to hate him before we really love him again. And I hope they're setting him up for something special in the future, because he's showing that he is a pretty special talent. There's a couple special talents in the next match, which are Cedric Alexander and Cesaro. Mm-hmm. This was a really good match.
Yeah.
We have not seen Cesaro as a singles wrestler. Well, we've seen him in plenty of singles matches because WWE doesn't know how to book tag team divisions. But seeing Cesaro without Sheamus at his side, apparently they are split up. Sheamus is now on SmackDown. But apparently Cesaro stole his music. Not a bad thing for Cesaro. Probably a bad thing for Sheamus if Sheamus gets stuck with Cesaro's old music. That's a feud in itself. They'll hate each other forever. Cedric Alexander gets a video package 2 weeks in a row. We're told he's special. He's coming up from 205 Live. And he loses his first match coming up to Raw.
Yeah.
Now listen, he is an undersized baby face in a lot of ways. He's built. He has an incredible physique. He's an incredible talent. All that's true. But he's an undersized guy. I can see a storyline where he loses that and he has to come from behind and he becomes an underdog. I can see all that. WWE does not and won't do that. They won't consistently put him on the show. As I said, he'll be teaming with Apollo Crews in 6 months, if that. But the fact that they beat him immediately with Cesaro tells me that these two guys should have been in separate matches. I'm so happy Cesaro went over. I think it's great. It's long overdue he gets a chance to shine as a singles competitor. But both of these guys should have been winning their matches on Raw.
But you know WWE's MO would have been if they wanted him to win that match, they would have put him against a champion. It's so weird that they, in order to debut someone and have them have an impact, they feel like they need to have them beat a champion. Right out of the gate.
Yeah, it's a really cheap way of doing it. Listen, I thought that both these guys deserved this opportunity. They both deserved to get a win. They unfortunately had to face each other. It was a good match. Both of them still have the opportunity to do something good, but this always comes down to the same thing. I do not trust the WWE to book Cedric Alexander well. I do not trust the WWE to book Cesaro well. So to me, this was most likely a wasted segment because we're most likely not going to see either one of these guys getting any kind of real opportunity in the future. Prove me wrong. I hope to be proven wrong here. We alluded this to this, I should
say.
You have
so many sighs in this episode, too.
It's just, there's a lot of sighs, Mike. I'm glad.
Normally, I would edit out a lot of your sighs in post, because they're not, those types of sighs. They're just kind of breaths. But, yeah. These are, they feel painful listening to.
Well, this one's especially painful. We alluded to this in the open. The Viking Raiders. All I can say is this. Na 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 na. Ha 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 ha. You morons decided to go out there and for no reason, at a whim, make them the Viking Experience. And the WWE does not admit fault. They do not admit wrong ever. The fact that we got a name change the next week and their finisher is changed
to be the Viking Experience. Yeah.
Is hilarious. I'm sorry to say this. The crowd already doesn't care.
Mm-hmm.
They came out to no reaction. They squashed the racist house party, and it didn't matter. And
still don't have their NXT titles.
They don't have their NXT titles. We're not talking about this. This has been so mishandled, and they are going to go down as a joke, in my opinion, going forward. Because they have no idea how to book tag team wrestling. They have no idea how to book these guys. And they are just going to be guys in a few weeks. Bet on that.
Ascension. Just look at them.
Every tag team they've called up from NXT has done nothing. Every tag team they've tried to... The only tag teams they've actually done anything with... have been tag teams that have been on the main roster, thrown together people like Cesaro and Sheamus in the New Day. I mean, really look at look at the last 5 years of tag team wrestling in the WWE. The Usos, the New Day, Sheamus and Cesaro.
Yeah, and then random ones here and there.
I love those guys, but those are the only people you have as standout people in the entire division with the Ascension. And with Enzo and Big Cass. I mean, they're both scumbags and awful people, apparently, but they still had potential. With the Vaudevillains, with the Revival, with frickin' Gable and Jordan.
Yeah, that was.
So much talent called up, so much prospects and opportunity and sanity. The list can go on, and they've done nothing with them, and... The Viking Raiders will be the next one in that line. Bet on it. But this was all leading up to the reason why we have the Superstar Shakeup. Dream matches. The kind of matches that we just hope for, and we sit down and we go, man, if we can just cross these rosters over, we're going to get these amazing matchups. Alicia Fox, Becky Lynch. We've been asking for it forever, and the WWE finally gave it to us. I did not see a Northern Light suplex from Alicia Fox in this match, probably because I wasn't really watching it, because I had no interest in it, because Becky Lynch not squashing Alicia Fox in a minute 30 is the dumbest thing of the week. If Ronda Rousey was still the champion, she would have squashed Alicia Fox immediately. Becky Lynch is supposed to be a badass that beat Ronda Rousey, and she has to go 50-50 with Alicia Fox for 5 to 8 minutes in a random Raw match. No thank you. Alicia Fox gains nothing by going 50-50 with Becky Lynch. She's never going to be pushed. She is not a very highly regarded talent. No one believes she's a real threat. Becky Lynch not putting away Alicia Fox in a matter of moments does nothing for her character. This was a waste of time. The fans lose, Becky Lynch loses, Alicia Fox gains nothing. the fact that this led up to an angle with Lacey Evans could have still happened with Becky Lynch squashing Alicia Fox in a matter of moments, and maybe we could have got another match. This could have been where they split up Cesaro and Cedric Alexander and had them both wrestle squash matches. It all would have worked out better.
Yeah. And look, I know that there are fans of Alicia Fox out there. I don't there understand are. It. It's like people who like pineapple on pizza. It's an odd thing, but some people like it. And those people will claim Alicia deserves to have a chance. You know what? Sure. Any person who is on the show, I guess they deserve to have a chance. But her chance is not with the champion.
Nope.
She does not deserve to have 5-minute matches with the champion. She does not deserve to have 10-minute matches with the champion. She should have sub-2-minute matches, sub-1-minute matches with the champion, because that is what type of character she is at this point in time. If you want to give her some sort of build-up and a fresh start, have her beat lower-tier people first. She doesn't get to be in there with the champion like that. So, fuck you.
Mike, here's a better thing. Omit one of those matches that they have for the title. Put it off to next week. Have her fight Dana Brooke for 10 minutes to a standstill. And couch this as the women's division needing to step up and prove who's worth, who's worthy of a title shot, who's worthy of stepping up in the division. Dana Brooke's been having this whole storyline, I guess, about being willing to step up to Ronda Rousey and make that a thing. Make it a running storyline. Do something with the division. This does nothing for anyone involved. Rob Roode. I'm sorry, Mike. Rob Roode has a mustache.
Mm-hmm.
He changed his name. Yes. Michael Cole said, we're going to go to a backstage segment that's going to explain all of this. It explained nothing. Rob Roode went out and beat Ricochet.
He did.
Let's get this out of the way. Ricochet and Aleister Black are on different shows, and they are no longer a tag team. Thank you.
That's a good thing.
That's a very good thing. They're great individual talents. Rob Roode could have been a big thing on the main roster coming up as a cocky heel and going after a secondary title and holding it hostage. They didn't choose to do that because they're stupid. And we got a watered-down babyface Bobby Roode, or Bob Roode, as he's actually called. Now they're doing a little mini reboot on him. I am great with that. I'm also okay with Ricochet being featured. Having him lose a match, his first real singles match or second or third real singles match, to a guy who has been a tag team wrestler as well and kind of a joke. Who are we kidding over here? Who are we servicing? Who is more important and less important after this match? Well, Ricochet is. I mean, it makes him less important by putting that stupid bullet sound before his music. I just don't get it. You want to feature all these guys on the show, but wins and losses matter. And they just don't seem to get this.
Yeah, so someone got their hands on a new sound effects library and was like, oh, there's a bullet Ricochet in here. Vince is going to love this one.
He already has a great primer to his music, which is the start of his music and the one and only. Like you're overcomplicating it. Everyone doesn't need glass shatters at Steve Austin. Everyone doesn't need, if you smell.
They don't need that cue.
He's got it. It's the start of his music, and the one and only is the cue. It's overthought.
Yeah.
So that's a shame. But, and this once again, if I thought this actually would lead to something for Rob Roode, maybe it would be an up. But I know it won't. Ricochet's just going to beat him next week. And we're just back to nothing. We're back to zero for both of them. And obviously, AJ beating Baron Corbin in the main event and going on to face Seth is a good thing. AJ Rollins, Jesus Christ. AJ Styles versus Seth Rollins at Money in the Bank will be a good match. I really, really expect it to happen. But I saw this as an opportunity to spin AJ off to somebody else. An AJ versus Drew McIntyre program. An AJ versus Samoa Joe program over the U.S. title. I saw this as an opportunity to get him out of the main event picture while still making him a big deal and elevating the people around him. And we're just going to get Seth versus AJ. Not a bad thing, but I thought there was better options.
Yeah. I agree with that. I'll look forward to seeing an AJ and Seth match, but yeah, we went over this a good bit already earlier. You know, before we get into SmackDown, I feel like I have this need to bring up this really weird dream that I had last night.
And oh, dude, hold on. Let me go get my dream book.
Okay. And you know what? While you're doing that, I'm going to grab this bottle of whiskey because I feel like I'm going to need it to talk about this.
Okay, we're back.
Okay. So in my dream, it was a lot like Pee-wee's Playhouse, an old television show from the 90s. But instead of Pee-wee Herman, was Bray Wyatt. And there were puppets and children and music. It was a fucking far out crazy dream, man. And I woke up and was like, wow, it's a good thing that that's not real life. Except that it is real life. Well, as real life as WWE can be. We can't get away with not talking about this.
I wanted to, Mike. I wanted to not talk about this because I don't understand. There have been times in the history of this business, whether it be WCW when they were dominating the Monday Night Wars, or WWE when they came back and dominated themselves with Rock and Stone Cold and all the characters they had, where if you put this pretty bad vignette on, I would have said, you know what? This is going somewhere. This will work. They'll figure something out. More importantly, Bray Wyatt is great. He buys into everything he does. He puts himself into this character, every character. But I have no trust and no faith in what, from the outside looking in, looks like a truly atrocious and what will be on BuzzFeed lists in 5 years as one of the worst wrestling gimmicks of all time. It reeks of that right now. And I feel bad for Bray Wyatt because that dude came out of that stupid door with his dumb puppets and his chainsaw and his cardboard cut out of himself and tried his best to sell this as something we should care about. I believe in Bray Wyatt. I do not believe in this angle.
And you know, I see a lot of people being like, give it a chance. Give it a chance. You know, I hear this so goddamn often about the WWE product nowadays is, give it a chance, give it a chance, give it a chance. Why am I constantly being told that I have to give stuff a chance like this when history proves that more often than not, the initial reaction is pretty spot on? And while we might be some cynical assholes when it comes to wrestling, more so than maybe some of you might be, we are more than willing to admit when we have been won over when our opinions change on things. Look at the Riot Squad. We made fun of them mercilessly, and now we are some of their biggest supporters, and we want to see them get better booking and better writing behind them because they deserve better. They've done a lot to improve themselves in this time. 100% we'll admit when we're wrong and when our minds have been changed. I understand what some people are getting at with this, that it's obviously going to be, he's going to have some sort of split personality at some point and going back and forth between his old self and this new self. Sure, in a movie or television show with good writing and continuity, that could probably work. But WWE doesn't do that. They haven't had a good history of doing that for the past, 5 years. So I don't trust them to be able to handle a complicated, detail-oriented storyline, something like that, very well. So, I mean, I'm going to be forced to see it for however long that this goes on for, so we'll see how it goes, but I'm with you that this could very well go down as one of those gobbledygooker fucking things in the annals of history of wrestling.
I would say it's likely.
Miss Bagwell, whatever the fuck her name was, on a poll. Fucking Judy, gobbledygook. Judy Bagwell. Bagwell. I wanted to say Maggie for some reason. I don't know why.
Good old Maggie Bagwell.
Yo, if they would have put her on a poll, she would have gotten involved in that match hard to big time. But yeah, like you said, all the praise in the world to Bray Wyatt for putting a smile on, going out and doing that. And I was reading a little bit before SmackDown that they employed Tom Savini, renowned makeup artist for in the horror movie genre, to make those puppets. Like, they paid someone who is a big time Hollywood special effects guy to make those puppets for something like this. Sure.
They just do not get it, in my opinion, and this will be another failure because they don't understand how to book their talent and they don't understand what people are actually interested in. This, you know what this gimmick reminds me of? It reminds me of Stardust. Cody Rhodes was willing to sell everything about that gimmick, but it was a non-starter from the beginning. And this feels very similar to me.
Yeah, that's pretty spot on there. But all right, let's move along to SmackDown. Where everyone's favorite punchable face right now in the WWE, Shane McMahon, kicked things off by calling out Roman Reigns. And we are probably leading up to a Shane McMahon and Roman Reigns match at SummerSlam, I'm assuming. Because we got Elias calling him out for a match at Money in the Bank. Roman accepts. Is this a way of keeping the crowd behind Roman by having him go against someone who is so hated by the crowd right now?
Having Shane McMahon do anything wrestling related is always a mistake, in my opinion. He is definitely a heel that is booed by the crowd, thankfully, because he's terrible. But the entire idea of this authority versus the babyface is still so nonsensical and so stupid. The last guy who attacked Vince McMahon came back and got a title shot by Vince McMahon. Kevin Owens headbutted him, and that was the last person to really stick it to the McMahon family, and the guy gave him a title shot on his return. None of this makes sense. All of it's stupid. Roman Reigns walked out on SmackDown Live for the first time and unprovoked punched his boss in the face. When Shane McMahon said, should he be fired? I said, yeah. He should.
He did. By any other business standards, that is pretty much protocol.
No, it's nonsense. Why was Roman mad? Because he wasn't considered the biggest signing in the history of SmackDown? What a fucking, like, sensitive asshole. I mean, none of it makes any sense. I don't like the fact that Shane McMahon is involved in this. Having Elias and Roman feud, I think that's a good thing. I'm totally on board with that. But Shane McMahon's involvement, this whole authority versus the talent thing, it was done 25 years ago. It doesn't need to be done again.
Yeah. WWE did something right here. Finn Balor won a match. Champion won a match. Hey, that's it is 50-50 booking from last week on Raw that these two guys fought. But hey, they gave the champion a win. And so that's a good thing, right? But they followed it up by the women losing again.
It doesn't matter. Because
it doesn't fucking matter.
No, it doesn't, because this was getting his win back, because this match did not matter. It was just a match for the sake of a match. And they will never understand that we don't care about these feuds because we see them so often. If you want to put Andrade against Finn on Money in the Bank, we're going to go, we already saw it twice. Each one of them won. Why does it matter? And yeah. they'll never get that.
And both matches were non-title, right? Or was this one for the title?
They were both non-title.
Okay. And then Kari Sane beating Peyton. And I got to say, boy, did the crowd give no reaction to Kari.
Well,
it was just like pirate music's playing, huh? Who's this? No one seemed to know or care who she was.
Why would they? They've given us no reason. Unless you're an NXT fan and you've watched her work, why would anyone give a shit? They put her with Asuka because they're both Japanese. Asuka walking out with her, vaguely looking through a little telescope, she looked so disinterested and so bored and so annoyed that she had to do this, because Asuka is a fully formed character and she's now just saddled with this gimmick of being a tag team partner to somebody she has nothing in common with other than her, where she was born.
The country of which they were born.
Of her origin. And yes, she is an impressive worker, but you don't just throw people out on TV and leave them out there all pink and naked for the crowd to dissect. You do vignettes. You build these people up by having them fight nobodies and squash them.
You should have had Paige cutting a promo for them.
Yeah, but no. 2 weeks in a row, you have them go out and get the best of the tag team champions, and they think that's what's going to get them over. No, because no one cares. So we have a dead feud that means nothing to anyone, and our champions suck. That's what where we're at the end of the day.
Yeah. Lars Sullivan beats up people. That was a segment again. And anything else to say to that?
Apparently he's done with beating up older stars and now just wants to beat up anyone. I think that Randy Orton's probably pissed off because it's his gimmick to destroy the Singh brothers for no reason whatsoever. So Randy's going to have a bone to pick with Lars in the backstage.
Stupid, stupid, stupid. What did you think of the Charlotte, Becky, and Quasi Bailey segment.
I thought it could have been well done. This
could
was
have
a
been.
This was a opportunity to do a soft reboot on Bailey, in the way of posing her as an underdog. She did win a women's title on Raw, but for a short period of time. She was not well received. She won the first ever women's tag champions, but she did that with Sasha Banks. They could have done a soft reboot here and made Bailey seem a little more like an option. They also could have used this opportunity to spin Charlotte off on a feud with someone like Ember Moon and had the next challenger be Bailey to Becky Lynch and had given us something a little bit more fresh, a little more interesting, and given another women's storyline going on SmackDown where Charlotte should definitely go over Ember, but would give her the rub by working with her and having some good matches together. But instead, we're going to get Charlotte and Becky again. And yeah, the match was okay. It was a solid match. Bailey and Charlotte definitely have chemistry. They worked some great angles down in NXT. But where does it leave Bailey when she comes over and can't even get in the title picture? She's just another person.
I know that he did not mean harm in how he stated this, but when Graves after the match said that, yeah, Charlotte won, she's getting this title shot, that match was just a technicality. It just it irked me a little bit, and because I'm sure in WWE's eyes it was just a technicality. They're like, Charlotte was going to be there anyway, so we just wanted to throw that match out there just as a throwaway and just to make it happen. If it's got to be a technicality like that, it just doesn't seem worth it. I'm with you on breaking her away and giving her another feud. And that's pretty much what Becky is telling her to do. I feel like this Becky Charlotte thing is almost reaching the point of annoyance of Cena and Orton, that we just saw it so often, like those two always being brought back together. I don't want that type of feud to develop between these two, because they still have a lot of years left in this industry. Hopefully that we're going to see them together. And if it's already getting to that point this early on, that's scary.
And I think that Charlotte is she's an amazing talent, and she as a character deserves to be up in that title picture. But right now, focus on Lacey Evans. Having Becky defend her title twice in one pay-per-view is really overkill.
Yeah.
Don't do that. Let her focus on Lacey. Let her beat her, because Lacey Evans is not in Becky's league. And let her go fight Bailey, and give Bailey the rub of working with a champion and having a really great match together. It elevates everybody. It really does. And let Charlotte help to elevate Ember Moon and make more stars in that division. Then give yourself some more ammunition so you don't have to go back to the same feud over and over and over again.
Yeah. This just all boils down to just bad writing. Bad writing, yes. Bad planning. And yeah. And in our main event, we had autopilot Shinsuke Nakamura taking on Kofi. And the big point of this was at the end, KO turning on Kofi and the New Day. Something that I think we all pretty much knew was going to happen. Maybe a little quick on it. I don't know. That might be up for debate. I would have probably enjoyed seeing a couple more weeks of him being silly with New Day, but it seemed pretty obvious when they paired him up that that was going to be a thing that happened. And this also makes me sad that I feel like as long as Kevin Owens is in WWE, we will never see a true babyface run for him. It will always be very short-lived with him turning on whoever he is friends with in that particular situation.
This made me very sad. I was not anticipating this happening right here. I thought they were really going to give KO a real babyface run. I mean, the plan was him coming back and fighting Daniel Bryan. They had to change it because of Kofi Mania running wild, which I thought was a good move. But Kevin Owens is relentlessly charismatic. He's amazing. He's really good at what he does. He's really charming. And he could work so well as a babyface. And over the last several weeks, he's done a great job of it. And the fact that they're going to make us boo him again so quickly seems like a missed opportunity. It seems like panic. It seems like we don't know what else to do with anybody that we have. And I kind of get that when you're booking on the fly and you're listening to the fans with Kofi, you got to find a challenger for him. I don't hate the choice. I just felt a little bad because I wanted some more Kevin Owens babyface. I wanted more. He's done a great job with a New Day over the last 2 weeks. It seems premature. I hope it's going to lead to a freaking kick-ass feud for both these guys because I know they can put it on. But I was surprised. I was definitely surprised by it. And my first reaction was, God damn it, I want to love Kevin Owens.
Yeah. I mean, I'll still always love Kevin Owens, and
but as a fan, I want to be the guy that can cheer for him. But I'm gonna, you know, Kevin Owens is going to do a great job as a heel in this feud too, and I respect him enough to boo him at the shows that we go to. You know.
Yeah, that's true. But yeah, I just feel like they'll never really give him that chance to be that babyface. And it's a shame because he definitely has it in him. And I feel like he can even turn like bad writing into something good because he's so good at ad-libbing that he could probably just talk himself out of something bad. But that was TV for the week. Is the Superstar Shakeup really over? Who knows? Who
it's cares? Never over, Mike, because no. The two brands are not separate. They are not presented differently. They are written the exact same. And
which brings, like, makes me even more angry about this whole, like, when you told me they did all this stuff for the network. They can change people over to different brands anytime. That they couldn't have been like, okay, we'll do it in, like, 2-3 months for these people because we have stuff. Just shows how terrible they are at planning. Like, and it's not even like bending over backwards to appease the network. They probably just didn't have anything else better to where they're like, okay, sure, we'll do that. Didn't really have anything better. Like, it's so sad.
It really is, and as you've just stated, they're not going on to Fox for months. Yeah,
I think October, November. Yeah,
the forethought and the lack of planning and all of this on a regular basis is really embarrassing. I understand that wrestling will probably never be like it was in the 70s and 80s and early 90s, but watching, you know, the documentary series on Vice and seeing angles with Randy Savage and Bret Hart and seeing the foresight and the long-term planning, both that was done and wasn't done when Bret Hart went over to WCW and how embarrassing that was when they had nothing for him, shows the best and the worst of the industry. And if you have no plans when your people are called up, if you have no plans for your champions, if you have to book everything on the fly, and then you wonder why we don't care. You wonder why people don't get into this. I would be very interested to take some higher ups at WWE, people that are in the know, and say, what are the best angles in the business over the last 10 years? And see what they say off the cuff. I think the ones they're going to say are ones that were booked well and over time and developed organically.
Yeah.
I don't think they're going to say things that they just came up with on a whim after booking 14 different things every other week until something stuck, and then they just put those two people in a ring together. I think that's the worst way to book a wrestling show, and the business has suffered because of it.
Yeah. Nail meet head of hammer, or head of nail meet hammer. Anything else that you wanna touch on for this week?
I just want to tell you personally that the next episode of the aforementioned wrestling documentary on Vice is the Bruiser Brody episode.
Oh, really?
So you must have seen something online that was like a preview or something of the show, because that was the one that was advertised after the one about the Montreal screw job.
What I watched was like 45 minutes long. So like TV hour show.
I'm not saying like a preview.
And it was on Vice's official YouTube.
Yeah. I think it might have been like the pilot episode or something that they put online.
Yeah.
Because I thought I missed an episode, but that's the one they're advertising for next week.
Oh, okay.
And the episode about the Montreal screw job, which we have seen and beat to the ground, was probably better done than the one about Randy Savage and Elizabeth.
Okay.
Less of the dramatization and more facts, more footage. It was better done. Still jumping around and really not telling the real story to a certain degree, but it was better.
Okay.
I'm looking forward to the next one.
Cool. Yeah, I still don't have Viceland, so I would have to watch it online if I find them. I did see a lot of people talking about the whole Cornette and Russo almost both saying that they were the ones responsible for the screw job.
Oh, it wasn't almost. They both absolutely did that. And it was, this was all about Bret Hart, but it spun off into a feud between these two, which was a very wrestling angle kind of thing. My wife was laughing her ass off. She's like, these people fucking hate each other. Yeah. And both of them are such dicks, but Cornette is so charming, and the fact that he's such a prick, and Vince Russo is possibly the most unlikely person in the world, apart from Donald Trump. That
you mean unlikable?
What did I say?
Unlikely.
Oh yeah.
He's unlikely a person as well.
He is not real. He is a computer generated image, just like Bob Lash.
Oh, good friend Bob Lash. But yeah, I'll have to be on the lookout for those and see what I can find. Anything else?
I don't think so, sir.
All right. Well, thank you everyone once again for joining us. Make sure that you check out our social media. In the meantime, follow us on Instagram and on Twitter at Miss Spots. You can like us on Facebook, facebook.com/MissSpots. And you can listen to this show in one of many different wonderful fashions, whichever suits your needs, such as our website, MissSpotsPodcast.com, or simply MissSpots.com. You can also find us on any of the major streaming services for podcasts, such as Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, Podcast Addict, TuneIn, any of those. You can subscribe to the show and get brand new episodes delivered to the device of your choice every Thursday free of charge. We're also on Geek Life Radio every Friday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central on geekliferadio.com. For Kevin, my name's Mike. We'll catch you next week. Good night. Good wrestling.